Now broadcasting in English. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, in Czech books, Edwin Muir, a Scottish poet's memories of Prague. Then we'll bring you another glimpse into the world of Czech cinematography in Screen Czech with Peter Smith. And we'll end as usual with another part of David Vaughan's popular miniseries from the archives. All that coming your way, so please do stay with us. In one of his earlier editions of Czech books, David Vaughan looked at the Prague-inspired poetry of the Scottish poet Edwin Muir. But it was not just in his poetry that Muir evoked the atmosphere of the Czech capital. David Vaughan looks at a Scottish poet's memories of Prague.
Today, Edwin Muir is one of Scotland's best-loved poets, and along with his wife Willa, he is also remembered as the translator who first introduced Franz Kafka to English readers. The couple lived in Prague twice, and on both occasions at moments of huge change. When they first came in 1921, Czechoslovakia had just emerged from the ashes of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and they were to live in Prague again 25 years later, when Muir was invited to head the British Council in Prague just after World War II. They stayed for 3 years, long enough to witness the coup d'etat that brought the communists to power in 1948. Muir wrote vividly about both these stays in his autobiography, which was published in 1954. His memories offer an outsider's eyewitness account of life in the city. Here are a few of Edwin Muir's impressions of Prague cultural life in 1921. The euphoria he writes about reminds me very much of the atmosphere just after the Velvet Revolution, 70 years later.
Actually, the life of Prague had a somewhat improvised air. This was inevitable since it was new and not yet properly organized, but the very improvisation gave it extraordinary vigor. The theatre was particularly lively and progressive. Less than 2 years after the war, Prague had probably the most brilliant producers and actors in Central Europe. The Vinohrady Theatre, one of whose producers was Karel Čapek, performed during the winter we were in Prague plays by Sophocles, Shakespeare, Molière, Racine, Goldoni, Alfieri, Ibsen, Strindberg, and Chekhov, in addition to plays by Czech dramatists, such as Čapek himself. The standard of production was very high. In addition to the Vinohrady, there was a national theatre, which performed both plays and operas, a German theatre, and a small experimental theatre. There were numerous cabarets with first-rate Rabelaisian comedians. There were orchestral and chamber concerts every night. At all these places you found an admirable mixture of classes, old peasant women with shawls, sitting side by side with fashionably dressed girls. There was a feeling of nationality and a feeling of equality, and the two things went together.
Muir goes on to describe the friendship that he and Willa built up with Karel Čapek, then just over 30 and already immensely popular. Čapek seemed to be known and loved by everyone, Muir wrote, going on to describe how people would stop Čapek to talk to him in the street, greeting him as Karliček or Charlie. And it was in the informal and relaxed atmosphere of Prague that Edwin Muir first discovered himself as a poet.
It was in a foreign town where everything, the people, the houses, the very shop signs, was different. I began to learn the visible world all over again. In Prague, everything seemed to be asking me to notice it. I spent weeks in an orgy of looking. I saw everywhere the visible world straight before my eyes. At this time, too, I realized that my fears were gone. There was nothing to spoil my enjoyment of this new world, which had been created simply by traveling a few hundred miles and crossing two frontiers. I was 35 then, and passing through a stage which, if things had been different, I should have reached 10 years earlier. I have felt that handicap ever since. I began to write poetry at 35 instead of 25 or 20.
Thank you. The Prague that Edwin and Willa Muir returned to a quarter of a century later was very different, although physically little had changed. It was 1946, and the city was recovering from 6 years of Nazi occupation. Many of the people that the Muirs had known, including Karel Čapek himself, had not survived.
The crowds in the streets looked undernourished and apprehensive. Here and there I saw a man jerking his head over his shoulder, as if the memory of being watched and followed still lingered in his nerves. The Czechs, as I had known them, were a noisy, somewhat unruly people, but now they hardly spoke.
But what Muir did find was a strongly Anglophile population. A surprisingly large number of people could speak English, something that he attributed to their having secretly followed the BBC's English lessons on the radio during the occupation. Muir quickly set about getting the British Council up and running, and he started teaching a course on English literature at Charles University. One of his students was Zdeněk Stříbrný, who later went on to become one of the Czech Republic's most erudite Shakespeare scholars. Now in his late 80s, he remembers the distinguished guest lecturer from Scotland.
Yes, I am afraid I am one of the few persons who still am alive. I can remember Edwin Muir as a student. He very much appreciated his lectures, although he was a rather shy lecturer. His two assistants helped us by reading excerpts from Shakespeare and Milton, and that was a great fun for us.
And it must have also been very liberating at the time. This was really just a few months, wasn't it, after the end of the Second World War?
Yes, it was very exciting to attend lectures and seminars and readings on English literature right after World War II. I remember that students really appreciated that they could again read English literature freely.
And this is how Muir remembers his students in his autobiography.
They were excellent students, responsive and eager, and their incessant industry generated a sort of intoxication which failed them only at the rare times when they could find nothing more to do. In the second winter they began to give parties and organize dances, and they flung themselves into these as if they were working at some task. They were like pleasure seekers who cannot endure a hiatus or silence in time, but must find something to fill it, no matter what. They filled it with literature, history, science, and philosophy.
But these few years of freedom were themselves to prove to be nothing more than a hiatus, brought to an end by the Stalinist coup led by Clement Gottwald in 1948. Zdeněk Stříbrný recalls.
The feeling was that this will last for a very long time, whereas it ended so abruptly in February 1948.
And it was a real shock, wasn't it?
It was a shock. It was a shock for many students.
The atmosphere of that moment, as recalled by Edwin Muir in his autobiography, could hardly be more different from the euphoria that we see in the grainy communist newsreels from the time.
I found a young Czech girl crying in a corner and saying over and over, "What is to become of us?" During the war, she and her mother had escaped from a train which was taking them to Auschwitz and the gas chambers, and had made their way to Prague through byroads to arrive a day or two after the Germans had been driven out. I tried to comfort her by saying that nothing would happen.
By coincidence, on the very day of the coup, Muir was being visited by the novelist Graham Greene, who had been staying in nearby Vienna. This was just the time when Greene was writing his famous short novel set in Vienna, The Third Man.
Právě se vracím na radu od prezidenta republiky.
That evening I listened to the radio. A great outdoor demonstration was being held in the main square, and Gottwald was the chief speaker. Graham Greene had written a few days before from Vienna to say that he intended to stop in Prague on his way to England. He was in our flat that evening. A communist member of the Czech Pen Club appeared along with him. The party was already keeping an eye on distinguished foreign visitors. We listened to the rehearsed, timed, threefold shouts that greeted Gottwald, and I could not help saying to the young Czech, "Why, it's Sig Heil, Sig Heil, Sig Heil all over again." He threw a startled glance at Green, wondering, perhaps, how he took it, and protested, "Not at all, not at all." These shouts, which sounded like the brute response of a huge mass machine and had no resemblance to the spontaneous cheers of a crowd, brought back mean and bullying memories.
After a while, Edwin Muir resumed his lectures at the university.
But all was changed. My class, once eager to discuss everything, was silent. Two communists were in attendance, taking down what I said. I could speak to my class, but I no longer had any contact with it. I could still mention liberty, but the Czech professors were in a more difficult position. They, too, had their communist observers, and a single imprudent sentence might bring their dismissal and the withdrawal of their livelihood.
Zdeněk Stříbrný still has a copy of a letter that Muir wrote not long afterwards.
There is a letter sent by Edwin Muir to the dean of the Faculty of Philosophy, Professor Kozák, in which he writes with much regret to tell you that sometime this year I shall be leaving Czechoslovakia and will not be able to continue my lectures on English literature at the Charles University next autumn.
The official reason that Muir gave was his health.
Well, he could not speak about the political reasons, but it's evident that the political reasons were the most important for his leaving.
At last I felt I was not doing any good in Prague. When my students came to see me at the Institute or at our house, I could offer them what comfort I could think of, but I could not give them encouragement without the risk of getting them into trouble. It was a hopeless position, and when the chairman of the British Council came out to Prague, I told him that I wanted to be transferred to some other post. He promised to see what could be done.
Edwin and Willa Muir left Prague in the summer of 1948, and they were never to return to the city. Muir's 1956 poem, The Cloud, refers indirectly to the new order in Czechoslovakia, evoking it with an image of dry, arid dustiness. Here are a couple of lines from the poem.
A prisoner walking in a moving cloud, made by himself for his own purposes, and there he grew and was as if exalted, to more than man, yet not glorified, a pillar of dust, moving in dust.
Edwin Muir died in England in 1959, and his memoirs, called simply An Autobiography, was republished in 1987 by the Hogarth Press in London.
My thanks to David Vaughan for that edition of Czech Books. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Once a month, Radio Prague brings you a glimpse into the world of Czech cinematography, from the Barrandov golden era to present challenges. Here's Peter Smith with a fresh edition of Screen Czech.
Welcome to another Screen Check here on Radio Prague with me, Peter Smith. In today's edition, just what is it that Czechs like in movies? Well, that and other questions will be answered by someone who should have an opinion. She's Briana Čechová, the head of the Czech National Film Archive. I visited her offices last week for a chat about all things cinema, and you can hear that interview very shortly. But first, a look back at one of the Czech Republic's most famous film directors.
A film directed by Václav Havel.
Because for them, the power is everything.
It is not the storm that is making me leave.
He was a playwright, a political prisoner, and a president. But all he really wanted was to direct. Leaving. A film directed by Václav Havel.
Yes, since this is the first screen check since the death of Václav Havel just before Christmas, we thought we'd look back at one of the great man's later, perhaps more intriguing incarnations, that of the film director, a long-held lifetime ambition that Havel finally realised in the final years of his life when he took the director's chair for the screen version of his stage play Odcházení, or its English title, Leaving. Although Havel primarily wrote for the stage, film had been his first love, influenced as he was by his father and uncle, who established Prague's world-famous Barrandov film studios and were firmly ensconced in the Czech filmmaking community before the communists came to power in 1948. Leaving, which was released early in 2010 and features Havel's wife Dagmar in a stellar cast, drew heavily upon Havel's time as president, telling the story of a fictional leader of a fictional country slowly losing status and control. Radio Prague visited the set of Leaving during its production and there spoke to Havel's former advisor Tomáš Sedláček about how his boss took to filmmaking like a duck takes to water.
He's got this very strange and unique mixture to do very many things. I mean, one doesn't realize how many things he's actually been through. Playwright, poet to a degree, dissident, being jailed, being a writer, being the president for many, many years. Being the ex-president, that also takes a lot of work and strain. Then he wrote a successful play, a book, and now he's even, wanting to direct an old piece, and that's a very, very wide spectrum. Many people don't realize that.
And the renowned actress Eva Holubová had nothing but praise for the vision of the former president.
Václav Havel, for me, is not only president. He is, for me, Václav Havel. And just now, Václav Havel, director. Before. And just now, in future, my director. And he's very clever director, he's very funny director, and he isn't afraid, never.
Sadly, Leaving turned out to be Václav Havel's first and last venture into filmmaking, but will nonetheless go down as another notable achievement for this most famous of Czechs. Well, a short tribute there to Václav Havel, the film director. And Leaving surely guarantees that the former president will enter the archives of the Czech film history. Those archives, which go all the way back to the very first ever Czech film, Laughter and Crying, by the pioneering director Jan Krzyżanecki, are tucked away in a secure location outside the Czech capital. And that's where I went this week, to speak to the head of the Czech film archive, Briana Čechová. I started by asking Briana what was the main challenge faced by an institution responsible for collecting, collating, storing and restoring such a rich movie heritage.
National Film Archive concentrates on Czech cinematography. Most of our films is on acetate or polyester films, but now we have a period of digitalization and we must be prepared for new media. Digitalization is a little bit problem because digitalization needs much money and our budget is very limited. We distribute first film on DCP, Markéta Lazarová, one of the most famous Czech films. In my opinion, it is very difficult, complicated to find the most important film. But director František Vráčil, he was able to create the atmosphere of the medieval age very originally, very authentically. He was able to use performances of very interesting Czech actors for this film. Is very important, the art of director of cinematography.
V roce zimy našeho vypravování udeřili v prosinci mrazy tak vášnivé, jako bylo tehdejší křesťanstvo.
Jan Kříženecký, pioneer of Czech cinematography. It's the beginning of the Czech cinematography and world European cinematography too, naturally. And we have films from this period.
And with that particular film, Crying and Laughter, dating all the way back to 1898, it's all the more important that the digital archive revolution has begun. Or at least you would think. Brianna Čechová again.
Digitalization is a very important step, very important for audience, because audience have possibility to see more films. But for the work of archivists, much more important work with original film material, because this material is able to live much longer than digital cover. The task of contemporary times is to explore how to store digital media. It's a problem.
There's quite a lot of Czech films made. I think I heard there was something like 32 or something a year?
A year, 25, 30, yes.
Which is quite a lot, really.
Yes, a lot, because, for example, in the Slovak Republic, 2-3 titles. Yes, we have 30 titles. I think some of them are interesting, but we always wait for Czech new wave.
So to have a new wave, you need a new wave of good directors and good filmmakers.
When you are free, at once you are not able to form something new. And now we have freedom, but we must find money for production and so on. And we have new topics. It's matter of atmosphere, of particular age. I can say the Czech audience prefer kind films, films with kind humor, something soft. But in my opinion, typical Czech spectator prefer kind comedies.
Will there always be a happy ending, do you think?
Yes, maybe yes, as something similar like films by Jan Hřebejk. It can be drama.
Jan Hřebejk, some of his recent films.
Pelíšky, Cozy Dance. We like to come back to the history, but with kind of smile.
Do you think some filmmaking is also about nostalgia?
Yes.
You know, definitely Pelíšky.
Yes. I think it's typical matter of Central Europe.
Ta dávno ještě byla ve výrobě a já už věděl, co ti budu hrát.
Thank you very much to Brianna Čechová, head of the Czech National Film Archive. And remember, back up those DVDs, because unlike film, there's no chance of them being around in 100 years. Now, quickly to movie news. What with the festive season, it has been a light month in the movie world, but one thing to note here in Prague is the inaugural Iranian Film Festival that's running at Svetozor Cinema. The selected films give a fascinating insight into the life of contemporary Iran and will be shown across 16 screenings in three sections: features, short, and documentary. And that's it from Screen Check for this month. Please join me, Peter Smith, again soon, and until then, please keep watching.
My thanks to Peter Smith, who will rejoin you with more cinema news in a month's time. Now it's time for a walk down memory lane in David Vaughan's popular history series From the Archives, which Radio Prague is currently rerunning.
To
Czechoslovakia played an active role in the Soviet Union's propaganda war with the United States during the 1950s, a time of edginess and paranoia on both sides. There was no shortage of people trying to flee across the Iron Curtain to the West, but every now and then the flight would be in the other direction, and someone from the West would actively seek asylum in the communist bloc. For the communist regimes, this was a propaganda opportunity not to be missed.
Soudružky a soudruzi, dámy a pánové, mám tu čest uvítat vás na
One such occasion was in November 1954, when the Czechoslovak news agency called a somewhat unusual press conference in Prague.
Abych vám představil manžele Wardovi, americké umělce, kteří požádali o poskytnutí politického azylu.
After welcoming comrade journalists to the event, the reporter went on to introduce an American couple, Herbert and Jacqueline Ward, describing them as artists who had sought and been given asylum in Czechoslovakia. Then Herbert Ward himself spoke.
We are the Americans. I am Herbert Ward, bass violinist, and my wife, Jacqueline, who is a dancer. Until 1950, we have lived mainly in New York. Then we moved to Denmark. And for the last 2 years, we lived in Vienna. Our purpose in coming to Europe was to complete our education in all fields of music and dance.
At this point on the recording in our archives, Herbert Ward's voice fades and is voiced over in Czech as he continues his story. He claims that he and his wife had become suspicious to the US authorities after taking part in a music festival in East Berlin. Then, he says, the FBI began to bully them, trying to force them back to the United States and confiscating their passports. This was the time of the McCarthyite witch hunts, and although his faith in communist Czechoslovakia may be naive, Herbert Ward's story is not necessarily an exaggeration.
We feel sure that this press conference will help us not only to make matters clear in our case, but to call attention to the activities of those who restrict the rights of their fellow citizens and who are making dangerous provocations that might lead to a new war.
Herbert Ward's wife, Jacqueline, a dancer who had studied under Isadora Duncan, also answered questions from journalists, painting a rosy picture of her prospects in her new socialist home.
Instead of having to look for jobs, the jobs are so plentiful and so many opportunities that we can freely choose the best way in which we want to develop and which we want to present our own work. And for us, that's very important, that there is so much culture here.
The couple was based in Prague's Hotel Krivaň, where not long afterwards they had a visit from the jazz writer Lubomír Doruška and his friend and fellow jazz lover, the novelist Josef Škvorecký. This led to a jazz review called Really the Blues, featuring Herbert and Jacqueline with the Czech band Pražský Dixieland. The couple stayed for several years and became familiar figures on the Prague classical and jazz music scene. The now legendary rock musician František Ringo Čech remembers being discovered as a 15-year-old boy by Herbert Ward, and he recalls that in the early 60s, Jacqueline achieved celebrity performing Native American dance to Czech audiences. According to Lubomír Doruška, the American couple eventually made their way back to the US, spending their last years in Hawaii. It's said that one jazz musician there still plays on a Czechoslovak double bass, left to him by Herbert Ward.
From the archives there with David Vaughan, and I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Our programmes are there in text and sound, plus a lot of interesting information about the Czech Republic. So it's an address well worth checking out, radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email is english@radio.cz, and you can also write to Vinohradská 12, postal code number 120 99, Prague, the Czech Republic. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
vous écoutez Radio Prague.